What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to six guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Ready? See if you can identify these five clips in the order that they're played. It could be from a song, a movie, a TV show, or something else. But if it's coming from this podcast, then you know that it's from Generation X. Listen closely. Good luck.
I can't believe I ate that whole thing.
Hello, and welcome to Who Will Save Generation X, the trivia game show that is dedicated to remembering, celebrating, and preserving all the wonderful qualities of Generation X through games, trivia, and friends. I am Xavier, host, and today we have two great contestants ready to compete for ultimate slacker prizes and in the process do their part to save Generation X from being forgotten. Are you ready to do your part? Please play along with the contestants while you listen and see what rad prize you would have wanted if you were here with us, saving Generation X from fading into oblivion. We're so happy that you've chosen to join us, and I'm sure you're going to get a nice dose of nostalgia and maybe a few laughs along the way. So if everyone's ready, let's start the show.
Good evening, everyone. Along with Warner Wolf, I'm Stu Mahan, and we welcome you to a most unusual event.
I'm very excited to welcome two first-time guests to the show as we share our memories of life growing up during Generation X. There's something here for everyone, I hope. But if you like reminiscing about the movies National Lampoon's Vacation, Pulp Fiction, or TV shows like Mork and Mindy and Inspector Gadget, then this is one episode you might especially like. We're going to save the pop culture nostalgia of Generation X from being forgotten today with these highly competitive Gen X siblings, Chris and Bo. Let's give a very quick hello to each of them now. Let's first welcome to the show the younger brother of these two, who has met some Gen X celebrities while working, including John Cryer, and whose coworker had a shocking surprise once when delivering a package to Ted Danson's room.
Not a main, say no more.
Please welcome Bo. Thanks for being on the show, Bo.
Hey, I'm Bo. I'm stoked to be playing. I want to say I'm fly like Grandmaster B, and I'd be hating on Kenny G.
Let's also welcome to the show, first-time guest, but long-time supporter of the show. In this part of the introduction, we say a quick, interesting, fun fact about our guests. And Bo emailed us and insisted that I mention that Chris does not know the difference between Pearl Jam and Soul Asylum. I don't know what that's all about, but please welcome to the show, Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Zabe. Thanks for having us here. Yeah, that's some deep cut, but it's like one of the few times where he's actually gotten over on me in trivia. So yeah, that was like song of the year one year, and we were trying to guess what it was going to be, and I guessed Daughter by Pearl Jam, and he guessed Soul Asylum, Runaway Train.
Soul Train's a whole other thing.
So yeah, he's got something on me, but we'll see how this goes.
Well, here's your chance for revenge, Chris. Before we start the show, let's give a quick overview of how we play the game. The show is broken up into three rounds of trivia and games. Whoever has the most points at the end of round three will win today's Rad Slacker Prize.
The power. Struggle.
In the opening of the episode, you heard five quick clips from Generation X. The game is called The Power Struggle, and in this game, you need to name those five clips in the order that they were played. At any time during the episode, contestants can interrupt the game and declare that they want to solve the power struggle. They only get one chance to answer it correctly, and if they are correct, then they instantly steal the power away from their opponent. And as an added wrinkle to the game, if you solve the power struggle this episode, you'll be awarded a whopping 20 bonus points to your score. We'll play the clip a couple of times during the episode, so listen closely and see if you can solve the power struggle. We're going to jump right into round one now and get the games rolling.
Round one.
You know, most game shows wait for their final round to bust out the lightning round. But since we're Gen Xers, we kind of do what we want and make up our own rules. And we're going to start the game with a lightning round. We call this game, What the Blank?
What the fuck?
Blank.
The game is that I have a list of fill in the blank statements that I will read to you. You will have 1 minute to give as many correct answers within that time limit. You'll score 1 point for each correct answer. If you get stuck, say pass, and we'll come back to it at the end if there's enough time. Each list has a theme and a total of 10 fill-in-the-blank statements. And at the end, your opponent will get a chance to answer the ones you got wrong and steal whatever points are remaining. The winner of round one will be awarded the power.
The power.
Which allows the player who has it to make all the choices in the game first and wins all ties for as long as they control the power. We played a game of asteroids backstage to see who goes first. And Bo pressed the hyperspace button while his brother Chris was still playing the game, which caused him to pop up right in front of an oncoming asteroid. A little too late to move out of the way. What a nice brother. Bo, you get to start us off with What the Blank by picking one of the two themes available to you. Whichever one you don't pick will go to Chris. Will you choose Journey's Greatest Blanks? Or will you pick Known to Let the Beat
Drop?
Which one do you want, Bo?
The second, please.
So your category is Known to Let the Beat
Drop.
All the following 10 fill-in-the-blanks will be song titles for the band The Beastie Boys.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Fight for your blank.
Right.
Blank shot.
Sure.
Blank monkey.
Brass.
Blank ladies.
Hey.
Blank on the bus.
Biz on the bus.
No blank till Brooklyn.
Sleep.
Pass the blank.
Mike.
Paul blank.
Revere.
Something's got to blank.
Give.
Blankin' and blankin'.
Stylin' and rhyming.
Close. Let's go to the one you passed on. You passed on blank on the bus.
Mark on the bus.
Blankin' and blankin'.
Rhyming and stealing. I don't know.
Well, the timer ran out before you gave that final answer.
Yeah, so that's, it is rhyming and stealing, isn't it?
Yeah, whatever you do, don't give your opponent the correct answer, by the way.
He knew it. He knew it.
So you got 9 out of 10, Bo. That's very impressive.
Most impressive.
You only missed one. You missed number 10. Chris, can you steal it? I wonder. Is blanking and blanking. The answer might surprise you.
I am most still, and I'm rhyming and stealing.
I was hoping you were going to get it in reverse.
Ryman and stealing is correct.
That's 1 point for you, Chris, because Bo did not know that one.
I know what Bo don't know. Fuck all.
Damn it.
However, hey, Bo, if the game was over right now, you'd win. I'm just saying. So don't hang your head.
Nine out of ten is bad.
9 out of 10 is awesome.
And 2 out of 3 ain't bad either, they said.
Gotcha. Chris, this one's for you. It's called Journey's Greatest Blanks. All of the following 10 fill-in-the-blank songs titles are from Journey's Greatest Hits. We're going to put 1 minute on the clock. Here we go. Separate blanks.
Ways.
Open blanks.
Arms.
Who's blanking now?
Crying.
Blank in the sky.
Wheel.
Blankfully.
Faithfully.
Any way you blank it.
Want.
Only the blank.
Young.
Send her my blank. It's more fun if you fill in the blank
with a dirty word. Love.
Don't stop blanking.
Believing.
Blanking, blanking, blanking.
Loving. Squeezing, kissing.
Try again.
Loving, touching, squeezing.
Well done, Chris. That's a perfect score of 10 out of 10. Great job.
Let's let the timer run out, though, because I like to hear the sound. Okay. Thank you, judges. So 10 out of 10, a perfect run. Well done. You even got the blankin', blankin', blankin' one. I didn't think you would, but well done. Robin, can you please tell us the score after round one?
Bo has 9 points, and Chris has 11 and the power.
Well done, Chris. You have won round one, and that means you have the power.
The power is yours.
Before we start round two, let's take a moment to better meet our contestants. The judges are the gatekeepers of all things Gen X here on the show, and to that end, they are requesting to know from our contestants about their Gen X credentials. That is, apart from being born between 1965 and 1980, what qualifies you to claim yourself as part of Generation X, and what might potentially disqualify you from being Gen X? Please welcome to the show, Chris.
You forget, Chris dates the basketball team. Not certain members of the team, Lane, the whole team.
Please tell us a little bit about yourself. Please include your Gen X qualifiers and potential disqualifiers.
So I'm Chris Arneson. I'm in Galveston, Texas. I was born in 1971. I started playing games. I played Zork on 5 1/4 floppies. I played Doom on 3.5s. But in sixth grade, we learned basic programming and we recorded our data on cassette tapes.
Nice.
You can remember that. Saw Weird Science live in the theater when it came out. I absolutely coveted the Hutch Trickstar BMX bike. And then we lived in Florida at the time, so my dad took us to see the first shuttle launch, the Columbia, at Cape Canaveral. Yep, I still had black and white photos of that from my 110 camera. So my disclaimer, I guess, would be I really didn't like pop 80s music when I was living it. I listened to punk and new wave and stuff like that. So I love it now for the nostalgia, but back then I wasn't really a big fan. Like my dad used to take a friend of mine and I, when we were like 16, he dropped us off at a Twisted Sister concert at the Cap Center in Washington. He would take me and a friend downtown DC, leave us at a club, and I'd go see Dag Nasty and Agent Orange and punk bands. And so, yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm qualified, but let's see what the judges think.
I used to play on an old Texas instrument, and my friend's older brother, he was the computer whiz, and he used those cassette tapes to load a game called Tunnels of Doom. And I'd spend the night, and it would take like 5 hours just to upload everything from those tapes to be able to make it play. Simple, super boring game now by comparison, but we loved it. Couldn't get enough of it. Those games definitely hold a special place in my heart. Judges, how's Chris on his Gen X qualifiers? Okay, well done, Chris. Also, welcome to the show, Bo.
Bo Diddley.
Please tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and give us your Gen X qualifiers and potential disqualifiers.
Let's see, I was born in 78, kind of tail end here. First concert I ever saw live was the Violent Femmes at Liberty Lunch in Austin, which was the most amazing concert experience of my life to date. And I've been to a lot of concerts. I remember Christmas shopping by catalog. You know, you get your Christmas list ready and you get the catalog and you'd circle the items that you wanted. I liked looking forward to the Sunday morning comics, like when they actually delivered papers and you had the Sunday morning comics to look at. I saw Halley's Comet with a telescope. Very nostalgic. Yeah, it's very nice. My disqualifier would probably be that I hated watching MASH, but I loved watching Dallas. I don't know how that makes sense, but I loved looking forward to Dallas on Friday nights. I think he came on, but I couldn't stand MASH. I don't know if it was the laugh track. I didn't like the way that the laugh track didn't sound natural to me, but anyway.
There's not a whole lot of laughing in war-torn Korea. That wasn't quite believable for you.
Well, you're going to put in the laughs when they're not operating, and then you're going to just add them in after? Come on now.
Knowing the performers on Dallas versus MASH, there was a lot more to look at in watching Dallas. So that makes a lot more sense to me.
You were too young for Catherine Bach, I guess.
I even put in my email that I did not find Hot Lips attractive at all.
The one lady on MASH, that was a deal breaker for me.
The one main character, I guess. Yeah, I did not find her attractive.
Yeah, I definitely remember when those Sears catalogs came out and I remember circling all kinds of things to reference back to.
Know what I mean? Know what I mean? Nuts, nuts, know what I mean? Say no more.
Judges, do these contestants have the proper credentials to continue being on the show? Okay. Well done, guys. You can stay. Before we start round two, let's take another listen to the power struggle.
I can't believe I ate that whole thing.
Good work, Mad Nottingham.
Round two is a game called Eight is Enough. In this game, I'll ask a total of 8 questions, 4 to each of our contestants. Points are awarded for each correct answer, 2 points for a complete correct answer, and 1 pity point for a partial correct answer if they can convince the judges for it. Players take turns answering questions with a chance to steal if their opponent answers incorrectly. The steal is worth 1 point, but more importantly, a steal also takes the power away from their opponent. The judges require that all questions must be given an answer, no matter how incorrect it might be. So if you say some form of I don't know here in the show, you will lose a point and you will get slimed. Insert slime sound effect here. Whoever has the most points at the end of round two will take a secret trip to the prize vault and choose the prize that the two of you will be playing for in this episode. Chris, you have the power and you get to pick between these two questions. Will it be a damn fine automobile, which is a movie question? Or will it be
an Elvis man should love it, which is also a movie question?
Let's go with... an Elvis man should love it.
After the success of Reservoir Dogs, Quentin Tarantino had his pick of projects from major studios in Hollywood, but instead chose to work on his own project, Pulp Fiction. This movie launched Tarantino's career into a whole new level, winning him the highest prize at the Cannes Film Festival and his first ever Oscar. With his memorable characters and unique storytelling style, Pulp Fiction has rightfully remained a cult classic with Gen Xer. Our question for you is, what is the name of the restaurant where Vincent Vega and Mia Wallace have their famous dancing in the movie Pulp Fiction? This is a multiple choice. Is it A, Jack Ruby's Drive-In, B, Jack Rabbit Slim's, C, Jack Murphy Stadium, D, Jack Celebrity Drive-In, or is it E, Big Kahuna Burger?
That's that Hawaiian burger joint. I hear they got some tasty burgers.
That would be Jack Rabbit Slim's.
Jack Rabbit Slim's is... correct. Well done. That's 2 points for you. Here's the fun fact. John Travolta and Uma Thurman are at the center of one of Pulp Fiction's most iconic scenes when Vincent plunges a needle into Mia's chest, trying to revive her with adrenaline. Tarantino used some ingenious movie magic in filming the scene in reverse, with Travolta pulling the needle away from Uma Thurman's chest. The footage was then played backwards to achieve the desired effect. Forward or backwards, Gen Xers have a lot to thank Quentin Tarantino for, even if he is a boomer. Bo, this question's for you. It's called A Damn Fine Automobile, the movie question. John Hughes wrote Vacation 58 for the National Lampoon in 1979 during a massive blizzard in Chicago. Just 2 years later, he was hired to adapt his original essay into a screenplay that would become National Lampoon's Vacation. This chaotic comedy perfectly parodied the experience of a long family road trip at the age before cell phones and tablets. Before the trip, Clark distinctly ordered the Arctic Blue Super Sports Wagon with the CB and the optional Rally Fun Pack, however, had to settle for the Wagon Queen Family Truckster. Here's your question.
Metallic Pete.
Here's your question. He didn't get the Antarctic Blue, but what was the official name of the green paint job of the Griswold family car? This is a multiple choice. Is it A, Metallic P, B, Avocado Delight, C, Truckster Green, D, Electric Lime, or is it E, Nut Meat?
Could you repeat E, please?
Nut meat.
Nut meat.
Nut meat.
That's... no, I'm going with A. I'm going to go with my gut.
A, which is what?
I'm going to go with my nut to go with A. Metallic P.
Many men have been led to ruin by leading with their nuts.
But you're going with Metallic P, which sounds like something you'd find in C-3PO's urinal.
And yes, that's also correct. Well done. Here's the fun fact. The Family Truckster is one of the most hilarious parts of Vacation, specifically created for the film. It was a send-up of American cars at the time,
with excessive use of imitative wood paneling,
a nauseating metallic pea green color, and count 'em, 8 headlights. It was all that, but what it really could use was a dead Aunt Edna storage compartment.
Did anybody ever notice when they're doing dishes in the house before they go to the vacation, they're literally scraping the dishes into the sink and putting them back into the cabinets?
I've never noticed that. I'll have to watch that. I've seen this movie a million times, but it's usually like I watch it on cable a bunch. So I never really watched it from the very beginning as often as I have the middle part of it. Here's a fun fact. Nut meat is an actual name of paint made popular by Martha Stewart brand of paints. However, for anyone listening, if you're experiencing green nut meat or metallic pee, you should probably go see your doctor right away.
Mm-hmm.
Robin, can you please give us a scoring update?
Bo has 11 points. Chris has 13.
So Chris, you still have a 2-point lead and the power. So you get to pick between these two questions. Will it be Justice for Caroline, which is a movie question? Or will it be Robin Will Do Something Here, which is a television question? Not Robin, our scorekeeper. But Robin, someone else, right?
I kind of figured as much. I'm not sure what the first one is. Let's go with that. Justice for Caroline.
Originally intended to be a low-budget production to make some money, 16 Candles shot up in demand after the success of John Hughes' Vacation screenplay. The film ended up being a passion project for Hughes, as well as his directorial debut. In 16 Candles, what car does heartthrob Jake Ryan drive? Is it A, a 65 Ford Mustang? B, a 77 Chevy Camaro. C, a 1984 Porsche 944. D,
a 63 Corvette Stingray split window.
Or is it E, a Rolls Royce from 1969? I said Rolls Royce from 1969. Judges, are you forgetting something here? Well, it's just normally you play a certain kind of sound clip when I read off that number. And I just thought, no. Yeah, but we do it every episode. And I think our guests and listeners were kind of expecting. So I just don't want them to be disappointed. We have 2 first-time guests. You make me look bad in front of my new friends. No? You're really not going to play it? Okay. All right. Whatever. Bummer. Moving on. What's your answer, Chris?
Well, I'd help you out for the judge's sake, but I gotta go with the Porsche 944.
Porsche 944 is correct. Well done. I don't think I would have got that one.
Corvette split top right out, because you know that they were taking photographs of the thing down while it was down, you know?
Right.
The convertible. The
944. Oh, no, dude, that was Jake's dad's car. His car was a 944.
Okay, never mind. I got the cars confused.
I think a preppy dude like Jake Ryan would definitely have a Porsche, though. So I guess.
Well, yeah, they show it at the end. When she comes out of the church, he's leaning. Yes. He's leaning right against it. So it's right, the outline. Yeah, it's right there.
Here's the fun fact. Gen X teen star and John Hughes muse, Molly Ringwald, would not have chosen Michael Schofield as her love interest in the film. According to a 2022 interview, she was pushing for a young Viggo Mortensen to get the role, now most famous for his role as Aragorn in the Lord of the Rings movies. In the interview, she said, quote, "He made me weak in the knees. He really did." And if you think about it, if Viggo was added to the cast of The Breakfast Club, for example, we could have had the brain, the princess, the jock, the criminal, and the Aragorn, son of Arathorn, and known as King Elisar, who became the 26th King of Arnor, 35th King of Gondor, and the first High King of the Reunited Kingdom. And also Ali Sheedy's character as the basket case. Okay, so that's 2 points for you, Chris. Bo, this one's for you. It's called Robin Will Do Something Here. Mork and Mindy was known for having much shorter scripts than his predecessor, Happy Days, with large blank spots in the script with a simple note that read, "Robin will do something here." This shows how important comedian Robin Williams was to the success of the show and how naturally funny he was that the show's writers would just leave dedicated room for him to improvise. What is the name of the extraterrestrial who serves as Mork's long-suffering and mostly off-screen supervisor on the planet Ork? This is a multiple choice. Is it A, Mirth? B, Orson? C, Krang? D, Spork? Or is it E, Shazbot?
I want to say for some reason it's B, B, Orson.
Is that your final answer, though?
That's my final answer.
You were leaning towards Mirth. I know you were.
I was leaning towards it, but I'm going to go with B, still stick with B.
B, Orson. Well, you're smart to do that because that's the correct answer. Well done.
Yeah, but did he hold his ears while he said it, Mark, calling Orson?
Here's a fun fact. As an entertainer, Robin Williams was unique in his generational span. We had his stand-up, Happy Days, and Morky Mindy, and the next generation loves him for Jumanji, Mrs. Doubtfire, and Aladdin. Not that many entertainers can have that kind of audience range, and it's a shame we lost him so soon.
There really needs to be a book written about Morky Mindy,
because it deserves to be a bigger part of our pop culture. Who knows? Maybe someday someone will do it. Let's get a scoring update from Robin.
Bo now has 13 points, but Chris has maintained that 2-point lead. He has 15.
Chris has 15 and...
And Bo has 13.
Chris, you can pick from either... Hadouken! Which is a video game slash arcade question. Or will it be Cinema Soundcheck, which is a head-to-head challenge?
Oh, I'm at such a disadvantage in either of these because he is so much better at Street Fighter than me, but I think I have to take the head-to-head challenge.
For this question, I'll give you the titles of tracks for a musical score of a popular Gen X movie, and you need to tell me the title of the movie that it's from. Movie scores are usually instrumentals with obscure titles, and that should give you the hints that you need to name the movie. We will go back and forth between each player who will give me a new movie title with each turn. Points will be awarded to the player that gets it correct on their turn. There are 8 track titles on this list. The number of points you will receive with the correct answer will match the number of songs revealed. So, for example, if you get the movie correct on song 3, you will get 3 points, song 4, 4 points, and so forth, all the way up to as many as 8 points on the final track. So you'll need to think of your strategy on when you want to get it correct and score as many points as possible, but not allow your opponent to get it before you do. So, Chris, this first song's for you. Song 1 is called Happy Flight.
Correct me if I'm wrong. This is going in the reverse order, right? Because didn't it used to be the other way around? You're just trying to pander to the judges to drag more of this out of us, if I'm getting the gist. Is that right?
The gist is the judges get pissed if you get it on the first one. So the judges are looking very sternly at you right now off camera. So if you get it right here, they're going to get really angry. But you do what you need to do.
Well, let's see. Happy Flight?
Yes. What movie featured the song Happy Flight?
I might know it, but let's just say Flight of the Navigator.
Flight of the Navigator is incorrect. Song 2, that's for you, Bo. It's called Sleepy Dragon. What movie features Sleepy Dragon and Happy Flight on its soundtrack?
I'm going to take the points and go Never Ending Story.
Judges, if he gets it on the second one, will you still be pissed? Because he's correct. Well done. The Never Ending Story is correct. That's 2 points for you.
And now you've tied me. Good job.
Did you already know it, Chris?
No, I didn't actually.
Oh, so he could have ran up the score.
I was thinking maybe Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, but I wanted a little bit more just to see.
I was thinking Space Camp first when you said Happy Flight.
Well, that, I see how that works.
You're probably the only one that's actually seen Space Camp that's on this podcast right now.
Well, well, well.
I stand corrected. I apologize.
Let's go through all the song titles and see where the listeners would have gotten it. Song 1 was called Happy Flight. Song 2 was Sleepy Dragon. Song 3, which we didn't get to, which was called Ruined Landscape. Song 4 was Theme of Sadness. Song 5 was Ivory Tower 12-inch version. Song 6 was Moonchild. Song 7, Fantasia. And if you didn't get it by then, Song 8 was called, what else? The Neverending Story.
Huh. I would assume the sad theme would be when Atrax was dying in the
Vortex!
I think that's when sad theme would have played if I had to pick a time.
Like the saddest part in all of Gen X movies combined?
Yep. Ooh, I don't know if I go that far. It's up there. It's definitely up there.
Okay, Bo, tell me what beats it. I want to hear it.
You have a script. I can't go off the cuff here.
For me, the saddest Gen X movie for me scene was the entire movie Howard the Duck. That was way sadder than Artex dying.
Crying a lot of tears watching Leah Thompson and her nightie getting rad with the duck.
And the principal from, like, I don't know his name, the principal from Ferris Bueller, but he was a bad guy, wasn't he, in Howard the Duck?
Yeah. Principal Rooney was a bad guy in Howard the Duck and in real life. So that was pretty sad too.
I'm going to come up with what's sadder than Artax. I am. Right. It's just going to take me a little while. So
by the end of the episode, I want to hear a movie that's more sad than Artax dying in the swamp of sadness.
Okay.
Fight the sadness.
Okay. All right. I'm going to try.
Okay. Here's the fun fact. The Neverending Story was an adaptation of German writer Michael Ende's 1979 fantasy novel of the same name. It was released during the special era of the 1980s when a PG rating almost certainly meant nightmares for Gen X kids under the age of 10. The novel's writer, however, had some critiques of the film that he found offensive. Despite having worked with the director on the script, the author, Michael Ende, publicly bashed the final product. Following the film's release in Germany, Ende organized a press conference where he referred to the film as the revolting movie and demanded that his name not appear in the credits, claiming that, quote, the makers of the film simply did not understand the book at all. They just wanted to make money.
But he was German, so it sounded a little bit more like,
the makers of the film did not understand the book at all. They just wanted to make money. Schnell. Yeah, that's kind of how movies work, bro. They wanted to make money. Ende was definitely not on board with the busty laser-shooting Sphinx statues that Atreyu encounters in the film. He said, quote, the Sphinxes are quite one of the biggest embarrassments of the film, Ende said. They are full-bosomed strippers who just sit there in the desert. End quote.
Good thing he didn't encounter the fembots.
Yeah.
Well, I think it should be noted that things were very different back in the 80s, and we now just know that the place where full-bosomed strippers who sit there in the desert is just known as Las Vegas.
Especially yeah. Like...
Back to you, Bo. You get to play this one. It's called
Hadouken! If you spent any meaningful time in the arcades in the late 80s,
then you're familiar with Street Fighter. I know Chris is. This game featured fictional martial artists from around the globe competing in intense battles to prove their skills. In single-player mode, you could control your main character, Ryu, and fight NPCs. But like many other arcade games of the time, there were a two-player mode where the second player played Ryu's friendly American rival. Your question is, what is the name of the character playable in two-player mode on Street Fighter? Is it A, Ken Masters, B, Ken Matrix, C, Ken Richards, D, Kenny Johnson, or is it E, Kenny Rogers?
Don't remember that arcade game, do you?
I was a Sega man myself. I had the Sega Master System. Then I got the Sega Genesis. Then I got the Sega CD. Then I got this Sega 32X, I think it was called. So I was strictly Sega, a Sega man myself. No Street Fighter on Sega. Oh, they did Street Fighter 2. But anyway.
This is the arcade version.
Yes, right. I know. I realize that. I'm going to go with A, Ken Masters.
Judges, is it Ken Masters? Correct. Well done.
Why isn't there like E? Wasn't it like Robin Masters?
Robin Masters?
Everyone knows P.I.
I don't think I've ever seen an episode of Magnum P.I. That's one of my Gen X qualifiers. Never seen an episode of Magnum P.I. I love the theme song. I know some of the characters, but I've never seen an episode.
He did. So they did the last episode of the show. I was living near Annapolis, but I was working in the Annapolis Mall in the 1 hour photo store. And everybody was bringing in pictures of him because he went to the Naval Academy in Annapolis. So there was a sighting or something. So I just remember everybody coming in, bringing in pictures. And because it was like the last show episode, the finale and all that kind of stuff. It was a big deal.
People mobbing Tom Selleck. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
I remember most Magnum PI being on in like the afternoons and reruns. And I think he was up against Alice. And I think I chose to watch Alice instead of Magnum P.I., if I'm not mistaken. But
that's not a bad choice, honestly.
If I got to pick between Alice and Magnum P.I., I'm going to go with Alice. Okay, here's the fun fact for Hadouken. In order to perform Ryu's signature Hadouken move, players had to execute a precise joystick and button combination. This led to countless debates and myths about a supposed secret techniques required to unleash the powerful attack. Learning combos from strangers was a phenomenon that started with Gen X, but in fairness to the younger generations, I suppose you rely less on information from your friends, cousins, girlfriends, brother today when you can just Google anything. But that does not stop my crazy conspiracy-loving Uncle Stevie from fact-checking anything he's ever read on the internet. See you at Thanksgiving, Uncle Stevie.
I don't know if you remember, but you could actually start Tetris on the NES at level 11.
Oh, I don't know this one.
And I don't know why anybody wanted to do that.
Yeah, you kind of want to work your way up to level 11. So after you're done playing it, you're trying to go to bed at night. You can visually in your brain see pieces drop from the...
Like the Matrix, but yes.
Right.
But you have to organize them.
Right, in your brain as you're trying to go to sleep. Robin, please give us our last scoring update before we get to the last two questions in the round.
Yeah, no problem. Bo just barely pulled ahead and now has 17 points. Chris has 15.
Yep.
Bo, you stole that one. So that means you now have the power.
Feel the power.
Awesome.
Bo, you have a 2-point lead and the power, which means you get to pick between these last two questions. Will it be Go Go Gadget question, which is a TV question? Or will it be Name That Auto-Tune Head-to-Head Challenge?
Name That Auto-Tune Head-to-Head Challenge, because I don't think me or Chris know much about Inspector Gadget.
And in it? No, I do not.
So I'd rather do head-to-head.
Let's do it. Name that auto-tune. Here's how we play this game. For this question, the judges will perform part of a popular Gen X song, and you have to give me the title and artist of the song. The catch here is that the judges are terrible performers, and they will also be using an awful fake British accent to make things sound more confusing and silly than are necessary. There are a total of three songs that you'll take turns answering, with the regular rules applying for stealing the power as well as stealing points. So that means this question could potentially be worth up to 5 points to one of you. So anything can still happen. We'll give you a hint to try and help you out by letting you know the year the song was released, as well as the genre that the song belongs to, according to the internet. That last bit may or may not help you. Bo, here's your first song. It's from 1982. It belongs to the pop and adult contemporary genre, according to Wikipedia. I hope that's your forte. Let's give the judge's version a listen.
He's looking for home, 'cause everyone needs a place. And home's the most excellent place of all. And I'll be right here if you should call me.
I'm going to go with U2, Bono, With or Without You.
Bono from U2 is incorrect. Also, your guess was incorrect. So that means, Chris, you get a chance to steal. Do you want to hear it one more time?
Sure.
He's looking for home, 'cause everyone needs a place. And home's the most excellent place of all. And I'll be right here if you should call me.
It is...
I think I know it now.
Your turn is over.
I know.
It's my turn.
I know.
But you're lucky. I may not be able to recall this. But I'm going to guess Careless Whisper by Wham.
Judges, is it Careless Whisper by Wham? Well, let's hear a little bit of it and see if you're right. He's looking for home.
Oh my gosh, I know it. I know it. Home's the most excellent place. Bo, can I ring in? Bo.
Bo, do you know it? Not for points, but just for funsies.
Do you know the artist?
Yes, I know the artist. Neil Diamond, of course. Yes. But I can't pull the song name right now.
Yeah, I can't either.
Turn on your hot light. Let it shine wherever you go.
It's like the recording's still playing.
The correct answer is Heartlight by Neil Diamond. Here's the fun fact. Neil Diamond was a big hit maker for the boomers generation. But in the 80s, he gave us Heartlight, which was his last of his 8 number one songs. And by far the worst of the bunch, in my opinion.
Agreed.
So, much like many boomers themselves, Neil Diamond gave his worst effort to Generation X. Thanks, Neil. My dumb ass already was an adult when I learned that this song was an ode to E.T. the Extraterrestrial. And I'm still salty about it. I don't know how I missed it. Lyrics like, in the middle of a young boy's dream, don't wake me up too soon, gonna take a ride across the moon. Those should have been a dead giveaway about Neil Diamond cashing in on the pop culture of the day. However, it turns out that I was not the only one salty about Neil writing a song about freaking E.T. According to an article in People magazine, MCA, which was in charge of merchandising for the movie, threatened a lawsuit because of the lyrics. Diamond made a deal with MCA, paying them $25,000 in order to avoid litigation.
Oh my God.
But he made many, many times that in royalties for the song. The $25,000 was hardly enough to make him say ouch.
Ouch.
I didn't realize that he gave it to one of the Beastie Boys.
Looking for a girl, I ran into a guy. His name is MCA. I said howdy, he said hi.
The two of them, Diamond and MCA.
Heartlight was a song that reached high on the U.S. charts. Alas, his follow-up tribute single to the Beastmaster, Long Ferret Serenade, didn't quite fare as well.
Ooh, you suck.
Okay, song two is listed as a hip-hop slash rap song from 1992. This one's for you, Chris. Artist and title to this song right here.
I'm the cream of the crop. I rise to the top. I never eat a pig, cause a pig is a cop. Or better yet, a Terminator, like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Trying to play me out like as if my name was Sega.
Sega!
Jump Around by... Oh my God, I'm blanking. It's Jump Around. Jump up, jump up, and get down.
This is painful watching you not get it. What is it called?
House of Pain, Jump
House of
Around.
Pain. Let's take a listen to it and see if he's right.
I'm the cream of the crop. I rise to the top. I never eat a pig because a pig is a cop. Or better yet, a Terminator. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Trying to play me out like this if my name was Sega.
Sega!
I'm coming to get ya. I'm coming to get ya. Spitting out lyrics. Homie, I'll wet ya. I came to get down. I came to get down. So get out your seat and jump around. Jump around.
Dave, I think you might have skipped a verse in there. I ain't going somewhere like something or other.
There's a lot in the song that's not suitable for this family-friendly podcast. We'll get to that in a second. Here's your fun fact. House of Pain was comprised of two rappers and a DJ, so there are no credits for instruments on the album. When they performed the song live, DJ Lethal would man the turntables while Everlast and Danny Boy did the vocals. Most of it is made up of samples, most famous of which might be the iconic scream in Jump Around. Many in the 90s, including myself, swore it was a sample of Prince in the song Get Off. However, according to the group member Everlast, it was sampled from a J.R. Walker and the All-Stars song called Shoot Your Shot, and not Prince. Let's take a listen to them and let you be the judge. Here's the Prince scream.
Okay.
Here's J.R. Walker. And here's the Jump Around scream. What do you guys think? Did you guys think it was Prince, or is that just me?
Definitely more so. Did they just play it in reverse? I actually was, I went to a show in college, and it was L7, the Rollins Band, House of Pain, and the Beastie Boys. Standing room only. Everybody performed. It was a great show, except House of Pain didn't make it because I don't know. They never said who, but somebody got arrested at the show before for getting in a fight with somebody.
Hard for me to imagine that a member of House of Pain would get in some sort of fisticuffs with somebody, but I guess I'm going to have to go there.
It's one of the greatest shows I've ever seen, honestly.
It sounds pretty rad. Big bands like that with a
small band. Yeah.
Well, it sucks that House of Pain didn't show up, but.
Absolutely. Well, it's still
good. They
pretty
much have this song. And I mean, do they really got much else to get excited about?
Yeah, I think so. I think I like that whole album, honestly.
Yeah, I do too.
Boom, kill, lock, 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 boom. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff.
Put on your crap kickers and kick some crap.
Some crap. Yeah, I was trying to figure out how I could word that. Yeah, there's actually some good stuff in there.
Okay, I'll have to check it out. I didn't give them much of a listen outside of their most popular song. Prince or J.R. Walker, you'll have to decide. But as a side note, to the best of our knowledge, this is the first song ever to mention John McEnroe, whose name conveniently rhymes with Smackin' the Hoe.
Quite the wordsmith.
And finally, our last song is from 1983. It is listed as a synth pop song by this rock band. Bo, this one's for you. Listen closely.
I've got a secret I've been hiding under my skin. My heart is human. My blood is boiling. My brain IDM.
Artist and title.
It's, artist to me sounds something like Trent Reznor would write. So I'm going to go Nine Inch Nails. Is it closer? I want to say closer.
Judges, I'm sorry. That is incorrect. Chris, you get a chance to steal, get a point, and steal the power. If you can come up with this, I'll let you listen to it one more time.
I've got a secret I've been hiding under my skin. My heart is human. My blood is boiling. My brain IBM.
All I want to say is to my brother, Domo Arigato, Mr. Bobato. Mr. Roboto by six.
Judges, is he right? Let's take a listen.
Bobo.
You did tell me the year too, didn't you?
I did. Not a lot of Nine Inch Nails songs going on in 1983.
No.
That's a good point.
Trent was probably like third grade or something.
I guarantee you, though, that he liked this song.
Oh, wait a second. I think Trent Reznor's older than all of us.
Probably.
But whatever. Let's move on.
Congratulations, Chris. You have stolen back the power.
Yeah, I feel the power now.
At a good time, by the way. Here is a fun fact. Kilroy Was Here is a concept album that is a commentary on censorship. Kilroy is the main character in the album, a famous rock star who is sent to prison by a group called the Majority for Musical Morality. The band became a real-life target of censorship by the First Assembly Church of God in Ankeny, Iowa, who burned their albums for what they considered satanic influences. Styx is one of their targets because of their band name. In mythology, the river Styx runs through hell. In fact, they chose the name because, quote, it was the only name that we came up with that we didn't hate. The PMRC came after them as well, accusing them of backmasking satanic messages in their song Snowblind. The band denied the accusation, saying, quote, we had enough trouble trying to make our music sound right forward. If we were going to put something satanic in our songs, we would have put it right in there. Not so you have to buy some sort of $400 tape recorder to hear it, end quote. If the PMRC bothered to actually hear the lyrics forward, they would have learned that the song Snowblind is an anthem highlighting the dangers of using cocaine. Only during the satanic panic would you find panties in a bunch over guys who wrote music like Styx. Let's take a quick listen to their other popular song to see if Styx was promoting a pagan cult or not.
Go ahead. Do it, Cartman. Do it.
I don't know why that tickled me so much. Here's the last question in the round. It is for you, Chris. You can take a commanding lead right here if you get it right. It's called Go Go Gadget Question. This is a TV question. Are you going to be upended by Inspector Gadget?
Ooh, I don't know, but I'm not worried about him stealing it, at least. Maybe.
Well, let's see. There were two main reasons to watch Nickelodeon when it first launched back in the 80s. You Can't Do That on Television and Inspector Gadget. There were a few other shows like Danger Mouse to consider, but those were the two big main guns back in the day. In Inspector Gadget, our hero must work with his niece Penny and dog Brain to thwart the plans of evil Dr. Claw and his organization MAD. What does MAD stand for? This is a multiple choice for you, Chris. Is it A, Malicious Anarchy Division? B, Maniacal and Dastardly? C, Monsters All Day? D, Mean and Dirty? Or is it E, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers?
I'm not 100% on this one. Can you give me those one more time?
Sure. A, Malicious Anarchy Division? B, Maniacal and Dastardly? C, Monsters All Day? D, Mean and Dirty? Or is it E, Mothers Against Drunk Driving?
I got it between B and D, I think. I'm going to go with B.
Maniacal and Dastardly.
Maniacal and Dastardly for a huge lead is incorrect. I'm so sorry, Chris. But you opened the door for Bo to step in, steal the power.
Oh, I forgot. I said it out loud, didn't I?
You did. You should have gone with Mothers Against Drunk Drivers if you didn't know.
I don't remember what D was, but I'm going with D. It don't matter what it was. It could stand for Mothers Against Daisies, the flower. Because my brother said D, I'm going to go with his secondary choice.
Okay, so you don't know the real answer. The power is on the line to take control right before round three when you really
all
need
right,
it.
And
you're just
going to
blindly go off and guess randomly without even giving any thought?
I'm going to go D.
Well, that's pretty smart of you because that blind guess was absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Well done, Bo.
Yeah.
Well done.
That's how it usually works out.
Mean and Dirty is the name of Dr. Claw's evil organization.
And while their name and self-description suggest that these are not good guys, Inspector Gadget's affiliation is with, let me check my notes here, a global secret police organization. I mean, that doesn't sound good at all either. Secret police with known incompetent inspectors? I don't know. We might have to hear out what Matt has to say before we take a side here.
Dang it. Well,
they hired Inspector Gadget. If you watch the show, you know Penny and Brain did all the work. I mean, he was basically a friggin' Magoo.
So I thought you didn't know anything about the show.
I don't mean like I know Penny and Brain, and I knew the side characters, but I don't remember. I know the cat with Dr. Claw and the ship and Mad. That's all I remember.
Take your win. Good job.
So what you're saying is it's all the better because instead of the officers doing their duties, they're letting a young child and a dog run the operation. Okay. I'm sold now. Yeah. Mad is definitely the bad guys. Robin, will you give us one last scoring update in round two?
Yes. I can't remember the last time the power was exchanged so many times in a round. Bo took the power and tied up the game. Both Chris and Bo have 18 points.
Congratulations, Bo. You have the most points at the end of round two. That means you and I are going to take a secret trip to the prize vault where you are going to select the prize that the two of you will be playing for in the final round. But before we do that, let's hear a quick word from our sponsor.
Inspector Gadget may return after these messages.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you're enjoying the show so far, please consider giving us a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from, and subscribing for future episodes. The only way a show like this gets anywhere in the podcasting world is by positive reviews and word of mouth among friends. So, if you're inclined, please help spread the word about the podcast and share it with that special Gen Xer in your life. We'd love to have you as a friend of the show. Thanks so much!
So who's gonna save our generation? Are you gonna save our generation? Who will save Generation X?
And now back to Inspector Gadget.
Okay, the prize has been selected, but before we start round three, now is the last chance to solve the power struggle question, to steal the power, score 20 points, and go first in round three. Remember, you need to name what the clip is from and in the correct order. Let's take our final listen to the power struggle, and then you need to give me your answers.
I can't believe I ate that whole thing.
All right, Chris, 1 through 5. Let's hear what you got.
All right. All I can get for the first one is, I know it's an Atari, but I'm thinking like the end of Pitfall, maybe. I can't believe I ate the whole thing. Yeah, you're right. This is tough. Subway, maybe. I mean, what's coming to mind is Strange Brew. I can't believe he drank it all and then he peed out the fire. And I think the third one is like an 80s sitcom, and I'm between Too Close for Comfort and Emptiness. Probably doesn't matter. Let's just go Too Close for Comfort. The fourth one, Dungeons and Dragons cartoon, maybe. And then I'm pretty sure the last one's Rock's Lobster by the B-52s.
Judges, did Chris get all 5 correct and in the correct order?
His other man has not his size, the endurance, or the genetics to win. It's physically impossible for this little man to win.
You got 1 out of 5.
Yes! I knew! I hope it's the last one, but we'll see.
It was the last one.
Okay.
He's
already got the power.
I know, but for funsies.
Okay, yes, for funsies. Okay. Let's see.
Bo, what was clip number one?
Legend of Zelda.
That is correct. Bo, what is clip number two?
Lost Boys?
Nope. It was the commercial for Alka-Seltzer.
Oh, yeah.
Very famous jingle.
I can't believe I ate the whole thing.
Clip three, Bo, what do you got?
I got Quantum Leap, baby.
You got the correct answer, baby.
Nice.
Number four, going to go with Howard the Duck.
No. I didn't see Chris crying when watching that movie because he's so sad watching Howard the Duck. Clip four was from the movie Willow. Remember when he turned into like a goat and he mad again? No?
Yeah. Willow wasn't big on my watch list. Sorry.
Nope.
So it's like my wife makes these and we nearly got a divorce over this power struggle. Because I struggled with this one. I thought this was the hardest one we've had so far. Because
I agree.
I wasn't familiar with the Quantum Leap theme song. I mean, I got it eventually. Like, she gave me several tries to listen to it. And I eventually got it, but it was just a total lucky guess. Like, I didn't know it. And I started criticizing this theme song. And she just, like, gave me the death stare. Like, this is a great theme song. And, like, do not belittle this theme song to the fans of Quantum Leap. Because they'll come for you.
Have you heard the Doctor Who theme song? Come on, man.
Quantum Leap does sound like a sitcom, Family Ties, Silver Spoons.
Oh,
kind
very
of
much day. So. Yeah.
I mean, it does, but it's very distinct in Quantum Leap.
Yeah.
Good on you. Like, good
if
on
you. Know, if you know it, you know it, but that's my wife's justification for it all. Like,
how could you not know it? Because you got to watch that much Quantum Leap to really know it. You got to be a Quantum Leap fan. You got to dig it.
You got to be a Quantum Leaper.
Yes, that's right.
Neither of you got it correct, but that means Bo retains the power and gets to go first in our final round. Speaking of which, let's play it right now.
Round three.
Round three is a prize round called Dysfunctional Family Feud. In this final round, I will ask the same five survey questions, Family Feud style, to each player in turn, and they will need to respond with what they think are the most popular responses from the Gen X timeline. That's the 70s, 80s, and early 90s. These are actual survey questions taken from actual people from Generation X that have been quizzed by the show via our newsletter. The player who has the power gets to answer first, with player two unable to hear the responses. Player two will then have to give responses to the same five questions and beat the other player's score without duplicating any of their answers. Whoever ends up with the most points wins the game and goes on to claim a chance at the prize. The winner of round two was selected in secret. Gen Xers, if you would like to take part in Dysfunctional Family Feud surveys, sign up for our newsletter on our website, and it will include a spot for you to reply to upcoming surveys. After the episode, head over to whowillsavegenx.com and get your answers on the show. Okay, let's play Dysfunctional Family Feud. Bo has the power and gets to go first. That means we have to send Chris off to the Phantom Zone. Your time will begin after I finish reading the first question. Question number one. Name a celebrity from the Gen X timeline that was bald.
Ted Danson.
Love that answer. Question two. Name a famous cat.
Garfield.
Question three. Name the worst game show on TV in the 80s.
The Dating Game.
Question four. Robin, what is question number four?
Name a great movie that was more popular with women than with men.
Beaches. Beaches. Bette Midler.
Yeah, we refer to them as women on this show and not this condescending. Oh, but the movie Beaches. I'm sorry. I thought you were being chauvinistic down to the patriarchy. Okay. Question five is, name the best song from Hall & Oates.
I don't know any freaking Hall & Oates songs. That's not my answer though. Hall & Oates.
If you don't know the answer, say pass.
Pass.
Okay. Let's go to the one you passed on. Name the best song by Hall & Oates. Any Hall & Oates song will do.
Annie. That's my answer, Annie.
Okay. The sun will come out tomorrow.
That's not Hall & Oates.
Different.
Wait, maybe.
Okay, maybe. We'll put that in the maybe column. Okay, let's welcome Chris back from the Phantom Zone.
God, I think I should have gone with The Color Purple.
You should have gone with Beaches.
Would you call me?
All right, Chris, I'm going to ask you the same five survey questions I asked Bo. You may not duplicate any of his answers. If you do, you'll hear this sound, and I'll ask you for another answer. It's a little bit more difficult, so you get two passes. Make sure you use your passes. Your time will begin after I finish reading the first question.
Name a celebrity from the Gen X timeline that was bald.
Telly Savalas.
Name a famous cat.
Garfield.
Try again.
Pass.
Name the worst game show on TV in the 80s.
Tic-tac-toe.
Wash your mouth out. I love that show. Question four is brought to us by Robin.
Name a great movie that was more popular with women than with men.
When Harry Met Sally.
Name the best song from Hall and Oates. And don't say the theme song from Annie.
Man Eater.
Let's go to the one you passed on. Name a famous cat.
I got nothing.
You can pass on it if you want to.
Pass one more time.
Okay, we'll come back to the one you passed on. Name a famous cat.
Morris.
All right. We're going to tabulate the scores. Let's go to the scores. I asked you, name a celebrity from the Gen X timeline that was bald. Bo, you gave us...
Ted Danson, which was worth 0 points, as I'm quite sure he still has a full head of hair.
Well, Ted. I mean, he's...
Well, he was supposedly purported to wear a hair piece.
I didn't know
he's bald.
That.
Bo, set the record straight here. You have some inside information.
Yes, he's bald. He's completely bald. My friend went to his room service at the Driscoll in Austin when he was there to deliver a message. And he answered him in his bathrobe, like, and naked, like from a shower. And he was bald, completely bald.
On top of his head?
On top of his head.
Okay. We didn't specify where he's bald. Anyways.
Which he has unequivocally denied any unnecessary baldness.
Chris, you gave us...
Telly Savalas, which was our number one answer, worth 37 points.
Nice.
Going into round three, Chris had 18 points and so did Bo. So we're going to add this to your total for question one, which brings the score to Chris with 55 points and Bo still with 18 points. So Chris has a 37-point lead going into question number two.
Guys, we get the information for these surveys from our listeners via our newsletter, and we get some interesting replies. So I'd like to give some honorable mentions to some of these entertaining answers. Honorable mention goes to George the Animal Steel. His head might have been bald, but his back certainly wasn't. Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor in the End of Superman. And the final honorable mention goes to the Right Said Fred guy who's too sexy for his cat. Bald pussy cat. Question two was, name a famous cat. Bo, you gave us...
Garfield, our number one answer, worth 33 points.
Well done. Chris, you gave us...
Morris, worth 29 points. This brings Bo up. He's 33 points behind.
Honorable mention goes to Jake, the cat from outer space. Toonces, the cat who could drive. And of course, the Right Said Fred guy's cat. Bald pussy cat. Okay, judges, we got it already. Let's move on to question number three. Name the worst game show on TV in the 80s. Bo, you said...
The Dating Game, worth 21 points.
I think that was 70s, but okay, let's see.
That's 100% accurate, over. Chris.
Okay.
A lot of the people in the answering the surveys don't own a calendar.
But they still, yeah, I know, I get it.
And The Dating Game was a rad show. Don't give me worst game show of the 80s and name a good show from the 70s. Chris, you gave us...
Tic-Tac-Doe, worth 4 points. The number one answer was Card Sharks. Bo, you are now only 16 points behind.
A close game. I loved all those game shows, by the way.
I like Card Sharks better than Tic-Tac-Toe.
Oh, where's the dragon? You gotta avoid the dragon while you play Tic-Tac-Toe on TV. What could be better than that?
Is it behind number two? Yes.
I loved Hollywood Squares, though. Absolutely loved it.
Jim J. Bullock for the block. Honorable mentions for this one go to the person who does not know what a game show is and said, small wonder. One person who clearly never stayed home sick from school and said, the price is right.
Wrong.
Yeah. We had one vote for this question that said, this question is void for not making any sense at all because all TV game shows were amazing back in the 80s.
Okay.
I agree with that guy. Maybe I answered that one. I don't know. He went on to add that, but I know what I would say to this question if it was about modern day podcast game shows. Thanks. And the top honorable mention has to go to the one vote for
this $69,000 pyramid.
69!
Of course.
Question four was sponsored by Robin. Robin, what do you got?
Name a great movie that was more popular with women than with men.
I think this is going to decide it. I really do.
Bo, you gave us Beaches, which was worth 17 points. And Chris, you gave us When Harry Met Sally, which was worth 14 points.
Oh.
The number one answer was Dirty Dancing.
Oh.
Bo, you're closing the gap. 13 points behind now.
Shout out to the one person who wrote, the most popular movie with women were movies starring Burt Reynolds.
Huh. Smokey and the Bandit. Come on.
And it all comes down to our final question. Name the best song from Hall & Oates.
Bo, you gave us Annie, worth 0 points.
The classic Hall & Oates song, Annie.
I didn't mean the theme song from Annie. There's some song from Simon and Garfunkel or those other two Hall & Oates about Annie, isn't there? There's a song called Annie.
So what you're telling me is you didn't know a popular song by Hall & Oates, so you went with a song by Simon and Garfunkel? That's a solid strategy.
Oh, man.
But let's see if it pays off.
Well, I don't think it did because Chris gave us the number one answer of Maneater worth 32 points.
It was probably the only one he could think of, too, wasn't it?
Oh, no, no, no. They're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, dude.
Okay.
Bo has 89 points. Chris ends the game with 134.
Pearl Jam for the win!
That means, Chris, you're a winner. Congratulations. You are doing your part to save Generation X. Well done.
Thank you, Zabe. I almost had a speech ready that said, Bo, you're the kit to my Dottie. But I gave you the intro to the first question, and I just let it play out from there. So thanks for playing, dude. I really had a good time, and I'm glad we could do this.
Yeah, me too. It was fun.
Bo, unfortunately, that means you lost this episode. I'm sorry things didn't quite go your way in the show, but did you have a good time anyway?
Did I have a good time?
Yes.
Beaches, please. Of course I had a good time.
Oh, nice.
I get to do trivia with my brother. Yeah, I had a good time.
Bo with a walk-off comment. I love it. That was a good one.
Sweet. By the way, worst scene, 80s. Was E.T. dying in the river.
Okay, that was, could...
That's a solid
comeback. It was worse than Atrex.
Well, it's still not Atrex, it's Artex, but that's still a good comeback. I don't know if I could say one or the other, but I agree. That's a good solid choice.
Bo, yeah. You 100% inspired a upcoming survey question. What is the most sad Gen X moment in a movie? So, well done. If you ever hear that episode, that'll be an homage to you, my friend.
Awesome sauce.
Furthermore, I think we just titled this episode Beaches, Please. So you didn't win the game, but you're going to get an honorable mention on the title.
Episode?
Awesome.
I'll clap.
For winning the game, I offer a chance for a prize by me placing bids on my eBay watch list on the winner's behalf. I will place multiple bids on the list and chosen in secret by Bo until I'm the high bidder. And if that bid holds up until the end of the auction, then I will buy that item for Chris and have it shipped out to you. Good luck. Let's take a look at all the prizes Bo had to choose from and reveal what was chosen. As is show tradition, we have the Garbage Pail Kid Chris Cross. Shown with its head on backwards. Or we have Reading Rain Bo. Featuring Jordy LaForge vomiting up a rainbow mixed with books, one of which is titled How to Barf. To honor Styx, we have this 1-inch refrigerator magnet with the image of a cute anthropomorphic avocado that reads, Domo Avocado, Mr. Roboto. If a TV show had any success during Generation X, then you can be assured that the novelization of it would be in a Walden bookstore near you. Here we have the novel based on the TV show Mork and Mindy. What better way to take advantage of Robin Williams' ability to improvise on a TV show than to write it down in a book? Next, we have an original piece of art that is an acrylic painting of the never-ending story of Atreyu hugging Falcor. So when I was looking for items, I was ready to poke fun of this listing. until I looked at the rest of the items the seller has up for auction. She has a ton of original pieces up of all kinds of Gen X things, so I think surely the seller is a Gen Xer and loves the pop culture. So I just couldn't bring myself to say anything negatively about this because the painting is beautiful. All of her other stuff is beautiful. She's Suzanne Foster is the artist. She's at SUZANNFOSTE-5. She's got to work on her eBay seller name, but otherwise she has beautiful works of art. And I just wanted to give her a shout out because clearly we got a kindred spirit here trying to do their part to save the pop culture of Gen X from being forgotten only in eBay form. There's a bunch of stuff from E.T. on eBay right now. That movie was merchandised to death. This was one of the more ridiculous things we found. It is a medallion shaped out of E.T.'s head. The listing reads, "No chips or cracks," and then immediately says, "The back looks like it might have some really small chips in it."
So, that is freaking creepy looking.
Yeah. So if you want a disembodied head of E.T. right around your neck, this is the one to pick. Next, for Pulp Fiction this episode, we offer this lovely black t-shirt that simply reads, "What does Marcellus Wallace look like?" It's simple, it's elegant, and it's also size large. And finally, we have this E.T. figurine that has a small plug attached to the bottom of it. The listing says it's a stopper, but not what kind of stopper it's meant to be. I checked specifically to see if this is a wine stopper or something else, but it simply just says stopper. So you can fill in whatever kind of blank you want with this E.T.-shaped stopper.
It looks like he's taking a dump on a manhole cover.
That's very much what it looks like. You could plug up something roughly the size of maybe a quarter or so with this stopper.
It's very, very large round hole that he's sitting on.
Yes, yes.
Well, they did start the bid at 420.
Okay, Bo, please tell us what item you picked and why.
I picked the t-shirt, the large size t-shirt.
And I love you for that. I just want to see what the back looks like. What does Marcellus Wallace look like?
Does he look like
a
beach?
Does he look like a beach? Is.
That's what the back looked like.
It's just a black shirt, Chris. What do you mean?
I'm like Marcellus Wallace.
Totally ecstatic with that in 22 hours and 20 minutes.
If he gets the winning bid, right?
Let's bid this up. Hey, we're the current bidder at $4.99 plus $4.43 shipping. Chris, if this bid holds up until the end of the auction, then I'll buy it for you and send it out to you. Good luck.
Very much appreciated, Zabe, and good pick, Bo. Thank you.
You're welcome.
In fairness to Bo, I want to point out that your little brother picked this item. He said, "It may not fit me, but it'll for sure fit Chris." So I win either way.
We're both winners tonight. This was fun.
Hey guys, do you have any shout outs or things you'd like to plug here on the show?
Just to anyone who listens to the podcast, I think, to the hundreds.
Well, we have two British listeners for sure. So I don't know if we have hundreds, but we'll see. Thanks, Bo. Chris, anything you'd like to plug before we leave?
I really don't have anything to plug. I just want to show appreciation for all of the people who do trivia content, support them on Patreon, do whatever you can. They do this stuff sometimes for free. If they're lucky enough to get ads, that's great. I go out to trivia nights and I encourage people to tip the trivia host. It's done very rarely, just do that. I would like to thank you to my brother, first of all, because without him, I wouldn't have had this competitiveness for trivia. We started playing Trivial Pursuit very early. I do want to just say thank you to my wife and son. They have put up with my trivia addiction. My son actually got me back into this. He introduced me to an app called Trivia Crack, where you could play against him and other people. And then I got into HQ trivia. We actually win money. And then it just spiraled from there. And now I'm in every trivia night I can possibly go to. And all of my team names are Monty Python related. So thanks everybody for supporting my addiction.
Chris, thanks for being here. We really appreciate your support of our trivia night that we have. And glad to be amongst some of the others that you've participated in.
Happy to do it. Appreciate what you do, Zabe.
Thanks, brother. I have two shout outs to give. First shout out is to the person who gave us the theme song to name that autotune. We appreciate you taking the time to make that. If anyone else is listening, like to try your hand at making a jingle for the games we play here, or would like to leave us some trivia questions for our
Challenge the Stage episodes. We encourage you to use our website answer machine at whowillsavegenx.com and clicking on that blue microphone icon. It's 100% free to use, and your questions might end up on an upcoming episode of the show. So listen to our latest Challenge the Stage episode for more details. I'd like to give an overdue shout out to Patreon supporter Lori from the Accelerated Culture podcast. Her show is a showcase of new wave and alternative music of the 1980s and 90s. Thank you, Lori. We appreciate you helping us make our dreams come a little bit closer to reality of making this podcast a full-time gig and bringing you episodes more frequently. Lori, since your show is all about new wave music, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that your sound clip shout out just had to be from the movie The Usual Suspects. Lori, here's a sound clip in your honor that we hope you especially like.
McManus, he told us another story altogether.
Oh, is that the one about the hookup with a dysentery?
What are you saying?
I say he'll flip you.
He'll what?
Flip you. Flip you for real. Okay.
Thank you for checking out the show. We know you have a plethora of choices for your podcast and enjoyment, and it is simply amazing that you chose to spend a little time on our show. Thank you. If you like what we're doing here and you'd like to contribute directly to the show, we have a Patreon account set up at patreon.com/whowillsavegenx. At our Patreon site, you'll see special offers for becoming a contributor to the show, so please take advantage of those if you are interested. Remember, Chris said you had to tip your host at the trivia night, so, you know, if you want to be like Chris, there you are. If you like, you can head over to whowillsavegenx.com and learn all about the ways you can do your part to save Gen X from being forgotten. But if you're feeling like a slacker at the moment, you can just email me, and I promise to write you back with all the details you could ever want. You can reach me or any of the judges at whowillsavegenx@gmail.com. In either case, thanks so much for listening. Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you again for checking out the show. We welcome you to share this episode with that special Gen Xer in your life and subscribe to the show for future episodes where we will once again ask the question, who will save Generation X? Later.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.